The following program contains adult language and mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
One more time.
Hey everybody, welcome to Song Each, the show of competitive banter. We each select one song that means something to us personally or not personally that we like or hate, and then we talk about it. Who wants to go first this time?
I'll go first just because I'm going to be lazy again.
And you are?
From another Diablo Frank.
And I'm a Illegal Machine. With me is?
Senor Fixit.
Since I've been going through my Blender magazines, I'm just choosing the songs that they happen to have brief oral histories on that are significant to me. This time it's going to be Borderline by Madonna from 1984. I don't know if you remember a time. I know Mac will not remember this time. Maybe Mr. Fix remembers this time, when you listen to an act on the radio, have no idea what they looked like. I remember hearing the song Borderline in 84, listening to it with my first girlfriend, and being convinced that Madonna was black and being very surprised to find out otherwise.
First time I saw her was MTV Awards, so I don't know.
Like a prayer? I mean, not like a prayer.
Like a virgin.
Like a virgin, yeah.
Yeah, that's the first time I saw her.
She's crawling on stage, yeah. No, I first saw her, I caught her on cable. It was the song Borderline. Do you remember Borderline?
This is the borderline.
Right. And she had a few songs before that one that had some heat in the dance charts, but that was like her big crossover hit into pop music. And I didn't love Borderline. I thought it was cute. It was a nice poppy song, but distinctly remember first being associated with Madonna, first knowing who the hell she was, not appreciating what an enormous impact she was going to have, because within a year of Borderline, every fucking girl I knew was dressing like Madonna to some degree, at least some influence, whether it was the bracelets, the teased up hair, the navel bearing, wearing bras as outerwear, you know, eventually became
that.
A thing.
The tutus.
I do remember, too, that Lucky Star was another huge one. Every fucking girl loved Lucky Star. For me, my favorite was actually Burning Up, because I thought that was just fucking hot. I love that song. And I became a pretty big Madonna fan over the years. I still have a lot of respect for her. But it was just such a weird thing for me to, again, so many acts, it showed the video age. So it was another reminder that we were in a new age of music, because there were tons of acts that you grew up on that you never fucking saw what those guys looked like. And especially the type of music I listened to, again, mostly country and oldies and shit, it didn't matter because there weren't any fucking music videos for those guys. You would see them at like the rodeo maybe or something. Country music really didn't start getting music videos to my recollection until later in the 80s, where you'd actually have a venue where you could see them. Eventually you had CMT, which for a time was the MTV of country music, and you only saw country music videos there. But it took a while before country music seemed to catch up with pop music and other popular sounds having music videos routinely for their acts. You know, tons of acts were killed by the fact that they were some Art Garfunkel looking motherfuckers and they had no sex appeal, that nobody wanted to actually look at them. And so those guys didn't get to appear in videos after a while. They fell off because they weren't telegenic. Where Madonna, of course, defined telegenic acts. You know, nobody looked like her. Nobody inspired the cult of personality. Nobody influenced fashion the way that she did in that time period. Well, as a person who didn't really listen to a lot of pop music at that point in time, because it was still a little early before I really started embracing what people my age were supposed to be listening to. But she was definitely an early exposure for me, because regardless of whether or not I knew who a lot of popular bands of that time were, I knew who the fuck Madonna was very early on. And she kept me in her sights for much of her career. As far as the oral history, though, since I bothered to read this, basically they just talk about how she never liked anything off her first album. She was a control freak. She wanted a more minimal dance sound. Her producer wanted a lot more kitchen sink kind of stuff, a lot more layered stuff. But she was unhappy with the song, and apparently she was so confident in her abilities that she was actively praying for Borderline to go away so that people could hear the new stuff that she had coming up that she thought was going to be far better than anything that was on that album. Which,
did
of course,
it
ended up fucking, yeah, totally played out that way. She, Like a Virgin, came out, which shot her into a whole other layer of fame.
What is your song, dude? Because you're like going like four different songs. Like,
no, well, I'm talking about Madonna in general, but the song is going to be Borderline.
Okay. I was like, you're kind of cheating here, man. It's not favorite artist.
Oh,
I remember the song very vividly.
Massive hit, dude. All these songs are just like...
I mean, it's a definitely a ripoff from Breakin', the dance girl who hangs.
It's not a ripoff. It's the fucking 80s. Yeah. Like, this song has breakdancing in it. Who does she think she's copying? It was the fucking 80s. Everybody's breakdancing.
She was pretty smoking hot back then.
Well, it was only about a year or two after this that the artistic nudes got released and ended up in, I think, Playboy or Penthouse.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the funny thing is, I wasn't really into that younger Madonna. I didn't really like start to see her hotness until she was at peak hotness around the time of Veronica.
Nah. That's I liked,
what about Material Girl?
Like a Prayer? I thought that time period she was.
Like a Prayer. Okay, yeah. That's true. I didn't really start to find Madonna hot until the Like a Prayer video.
Yeah.
She looked really good with brown hair.
Yeah.
And she looked great in that slip.
Yeah.
Pushing up the boobs and everything. Yeah.
That's when I found her.
True, so what's the chronology here? Still, I'm not good with Madonna chronology.
Okay.
So Lucky Star was before this?
After this. Borderline was her first big pop hit. I think that Burning Up and a couple other ones were dance hits before this, but she didn't cross over on those.
Everybody. Released October the 6th, 1982. Worldwide sales of 400,000. Burning Up. Released March the 9th, 1983. Worldwide sales of 350,000. Holiday. Released September the 7th, 1983. Worldwide sales of 2,400,000. Billboard rank of 16. Lucky Star. Released September the 8th, 1983. Worldwide sales of 1,740,000. Billboard rank of 4. Borderline. Released February the 15th, 1984. Worldwide sales of 1,400,000. Billboard rank of 10. In the US, the song was released before Lucky Star and became Madonna's first top 10 hit. Madonna's eponymous first album was followed by Like a Virgin later in 1984.
So then, when was Material Girl?
That was on Like a Prayer. Or not Like a Prayer, sorry, Like a Virgin.
Okay, I said timeline.
Everybody was a demo released as a single in 1982. Its modest success greenlit production on Madonna's first full album, released July the 27th, 1983. Singles from the album proceeded into early 1984, the same year as her follow-up, Like a Virgin's release that November.
This is 84.
Okay. See, for me, it was just, this is Madonna. There was no discovering Madonna. It was,
she was always there.
Madonna
for
was
you.
Already an entity living about
I remember
space and Earth.
I knew Madonna was big when we saw her on MTV and she did Like a Virgin. It was like, yeah, that's Madonna now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of those break the internet before there's an internet moment. Yeah. Everybody, once she crawled across that stage, moaning and simulating things that were not allowed on any kind of television back then, they really weren't even allowed in fucking movies for the most part. Everybody knew who the fuck Madonna was after that.
I still remember my stepsister dragging me to go see Who's That Girl.
I'm sorry. That was not a good movie. And I liked it okay back then, but I tried to watch it as an adult.
What was the other
like
one she did?
Desperately Seeking Susan.
That one. Yeah.
Which is generally considered the only good Madonna movie. I'll defend Dick Tracy, but that's about it.
Yeah, that'll be you.
I told you, I fell asleep during Dick Tracy, I think. I didn't fall asleep, but I just... When I left Dick Tracy, I was a kid, and I was just like, what the hell did I just watch? That was the most boring shit ever, dude.
Well, see, I read the
and
comics.
And I don't even think I even paused for a second when it was on TV since then. That's another movie that I would like to probably revisit just to see if it was really as bad as I remember to be.
I have it on DVD.
I don't doubt it.
Might be the only existing copy.
I didn't pay a lot for it either. I'm pretty sure it was a $5 or so. I liked Dick Tracy better than most people because they did a comic book prelude that led into a comic book adaptation of the movie, and the prelude was way better than the actual movie, story-wise, plus Kyle Baker artwork. So I was more hyped for Dick Tracy than most people.
This was a one song each is now a roll spine.
Kyle Baker's, some of his best work was on the prelude to the...
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Borderline by Madonna.
Welcome to Tony's Ultimate Party Album. Woo! It's in association with Flash FM. Now, every time I host a party, certain things are guaranteed. Good music, a visit from the friendly law enforcement, and so many people in and out of my bedroom, they should install a revolving door. And now you can party with me, Tony, only I don't have to let you in my house. This album is just like a party at my house. So hide the valuables, cover the furniture with plastic, and remember, the world is our ashtray. Let's get the party started! Wow!
Now, if it's totally tubular, rad, or awesome, it's on Flash FM.
And you can dance. for inspiration.
In Midtown Manhattan, hundreds of Madonna wannabes packed into the Madonna Land shop at Macy's department store for a Madonna look-alike contest.
Madonna, at this point, I think represents all of the young fashions in our country. And by looking around Macy's and seeing all the would-be Madonna lookalikes, it certainly proves the point.
It's the only one that we can look up to nowadays. She doesn't condemn femininity.
And you wear Madonna clothes, everybody looks at you, right?
Everybody stares, look at that girl over there.
She's pretty, and I like her.
Over 100 lookalikes strutted their stuff for a panel of celebrity judges, and the winner was 16-year-old Jean Ann DeFranco of Queens, New York.
It's a nice style. It's different. Nobody else does it, you know. It's by itself.
From Macy's, the Madonna wannabes joined other lookalikes at Radio City Music Hall for Madonna's sold-out show. There, one Madonnaette explained the lookalike phenomenon.
Because it's fun, and I love attention. I just eat it up, and it's fun, you know. I can have my own identity at other times, but, you know, what the heck. Live it up while you can.
Finally, Madonna mania hit a fever pitch as the real Madonna hit the stage.
Okay. All right, Matt, what you want?
I don't want to do this song off this soundtrack, but I'm going to do People Are Strange by The Doors.
Okay.
People are strange.
Lost Boys.
Your first Doors Lost entry Boys. Is going to be...
People are strange. Well, it's more because of Lost Boys more than Doors. But what's the fucking song in the movie where the dude's playing the saxophone? What fucking song is
that? That's Echo and the Bunnymen.
Is that Echo and the Bunnymen? We'll play Echo and the Bunnymen instead.
People are strange.
Yes, he's not the Doors. It's the Echo's cover of the Doors.
Yeah.
People are strange.
No, it's not.
No, Echo and the Bunnymen cover People Are Strange. It's not the Doors in the actual
for real?
Movie. Yeah, it's a cover.
I could have swore Echo and the Bunnymen had a...
I'm saying Echo and the Bunnymen covered People Are Strange.
That's fine. But what, during the scene at the carnival, the greased up dude is playing the saxophone, what song is that?
Is it Lost in the Shadows? Is that, there's a saxophone in Lost in the Shadows? Lost in the Shadows. My brother had the Lost Boys soundtrack, so we listened to every
fucking
track.
Play Lost in the Shadows.
Let's
see if that's it. Sorry, I know you're just pecking around on this thing. I apologize.
No, I'm going to put Lost Boys, and it should.
That's probably... Yeah, but see, you're doing Echo and the Bunnymen Lost Boys, so it's going to bring up People Are Strange.
No, hold on.
Yes, because now you're not even getting, like, suggestions. Google's like, no, this too obscure.
See, Lost Boys. Oh, wait, Lost Boys and Found. My bad.
The soundtrack to the Lost Boys, track by track, is Good Times by NXS and Jimmy Barnes.
Not that one.
Lost in the Shadows by Lou Gramm.
Try that one.
Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me by Roger Daltrey.
Delete Echo in the fucking Bunnymen, please.
Laying Down the Law by NXS and Jimmy Barnes. People Are Strange, covered by Echo and the Bunnymen. Cry Little Sister by Gerard McMahon. Power Play by Eddie and the Tide. I Still Believe by Tim Capello. And Beauty Has Her Way by Mummy Calls, and To the Shock of Miss Louise by Thomas Newman. Now, is that I Still Believe the... I Still Believe! Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. No?
No, I don't believe so. I know what song he's talking about. There's a guy playing a sax.
It's probably one of these NXS numbers then, right?
No.
I don't think it's NXS. Gonna have a good
time tonight. Cry, little sister, thou
Yeah, that's it. Maybe that is it. Huh? Don't you cry, little sister, Thou shalt not
The children's
fall.
Chorus.
That's the fucking song. So what fucking song is that?
So that's Cry Little Sister by Gerard McMahon.
There you go. Play that song.
Blue mask away. Strangers look on. When will they love this loneliness? Temptation. Your veins. I will not last.
that's my song for one song each. I didn't even know what the fucking song was. We'll just make it this one. I don't even think this is the saxophone, greased up saxophone. I don't fucking care.
NXS were big on sax. They had a sax player in the band.
Maybe it was.
That's the part.
This is the scene, but yeah. I don't know if this was the...
This was my favorite song off that soundtrack. Yeah. I never was that into the movie. I like the soundtrack better than the movie, to be honest with you.
Are you mad, man? Well, I mean, I don't blame you. The soundtrack is fucking rad.
Yeah.
But this movie is...
I've seen it like twice, maybe. Maybe.
What?
One of my favorite movies.
Maybe twice.
I've seen it twice probably this year, and it's only like the 10th day of the year. Maggots, Michael.
Dude, she's so
You're eating
hot.
Maggots.
What actress is that?
Jimmy Gertz, isn't it?
I don't know, but she's smoking hot, dude.
She's the chick from Lesson Zero, right?
Yeah. Fucking movie's awesome, dude.
So good, dude.
You know why it's called Lost Boys, right?
From Neverland? Yeah.
It's supposed to be based off of Peter Pan. That's the Lost Boys. But they took out Peter.
It is Jamie Gertz, by the way.
They hinted that Peter Pan and the Lost Boys were all actual vampires. Mm. That's why they were kids forever. I thought that was kind of a cool premise.
Thank you for being involved in my one song each.
Huh?
You're adding more depth to this than I would have been able to, so I appreciate you being here. I'm not being sarcastic.
I enjoyed this movie, and I actually did watch a brief history of the movie, because I always wondered, why do they call it Lost Boys? And I watched some documentary, and they're like, a script was going through Hollywood over and over and over, and it started out with Peter Pan and the Lost Boys as vampires, and as it kept working its way out, they took out Peter Pan and just Lost Boys.
That's fucking rad. I love this movie even more now.
Yeah, because they were going to hint that the reason Peter and them never grew up was because they're vampires.
Holy shit!
And the actual script, if I remember correctly, they were younger, like 14, 15-year-old kids, like little punk
kids. Closer to the age of the Frog Brothers and Corey Haim, right?
Yeah. And so when they kill people, it was supposed to be shocking because they're like, wait a minute, why are they killing? Because they're children. And they're actually like 300 years old. They're actually adults just trapped in their bodies.
I think I'd actually think that was cooler. Jason Patrick, I think, is one of the big problems. I've never been into him. I think the only thing
I've
ever been...
It doesn't matter. He's not even the star of the movie.
He's the star of the fucking movie.
No, he's not the star of the movie.
Oh, hell no.
No, come on. The Frog Brothers are the star of the fucking movie.
Well, they're the saving grace
of the movie. Kiefer Sutherland is the star of this movie.
Yeah, but I don't think he's one of Kiefer's better roles.
He's the straight man. He's not the star of the movie.
He's supposed to be your point of view, I guess.
It's Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. He's the... older brother who gives him some shit.
Yeah. But I mean, given my brothers, I'd always go for like a Monster Squad or even in the Corey Haim Oprah, I preferred Silver Bullet.
Oh, no. Silver Bullet was dope. I like those, but this one actually would scare me. Like, this one just...
Well, vampires didn't really do it for me. Werewolves scared me more.
I love the fucking terrifying fact that they're in that cave with that collapsed hotel. I always thought that was such a cool
thing. But that's just it. It's so, like, romanticized. It's so, like, Anne
Rice-y kind
of shit.
It's not fucking Twilight, dude. They're not fucking sparkling. They fucking are off.
They're pretty... I love that scene.
Yeah. That's a fucking great scene.
There are so many iconic scenes in this movie.
Come on, Michael. Just fall down, Michael. Oh, dude. And then he's falling, and then he wakes up in his fucking bed.
Or when they fucking stab Ted from... Was it Bill?
Bill. Oh, yeah.
It was Bill, right? When they freaking stab him.
He explodes.
Look at all that fucking goo and shit's coming out of him. Oh, my God.
Or they have that little kid that's a vampire and he vamps out.
That's when you were talking about the Peter Pan thing. That he was the little kid was the first thing that popped in my head.
Well, see, that's the thing, though.
See, I guess that's the age we were trying to go for. You think that'd be freakier?
That's the thing. I like the stuff with the Corys. I like the stuff at the end when they're actually slaying the vampires and the big twist about who the king of the vampires is. The shit with the grandpa. All that stuff is cool. It's the stuff where it's the actual gang, the Lost Boys gang, and Jason Patrick's character. That's the shit I'm not into.
Well,
or at least I wasn't into back then. I literally have not watched this movie in at least 25 years.
I'm going to probably watch it.
Minimum 25
years. I'll probably watch it tomorrow.
I think of a lot of the 80s movies, this movie has held up way better.
I love this part. And so, just so you know, it was supposed to be Santa Barbara.
Oh, he says like totally says the wrong thing.
But they had to change it into a fictitious town because Santa Barbara did not want to be associated with it.
I would assume they wouldn't want a bunch of people in the 80s.
Because they do this. There was supposed to be a scene where they show like all the lost people and it was going to say Santa Barbara and they're like, yeah, no.
So the reason I picked the song is that this is... For my childhood, this is like my 80s movie. Uh-huh. It's not the fucking Goonies. It's not I loved Monster Squad as a kid. It's not Monster Squad. It's fucking Lost Boys. This movie scared the shit out of me as a kid. I related to it. Like, the Frog Brothers were me and my friends. Mm-hmm. We collected comic books. This is how you kill the vampires. And they're going through the back issues. Yeah. And they're pulling out their guide to kill vampires by going through the old fucking comic books and shit. We moved all the time as kids.
So we were always these just outsiders showing up in these cities. So then you had to kind of meet people, and there were always, you would find the kids that knew the lay of the land, and those were the Frog Brothers, right? But I was Corey Haim, I guess. God, that sounds really bad. It sounds bad now. It didn't sound bad in the 80s.
With your big dog?
Yeah, with our German Shepherd. So, but that's what it was. We were just these outsiders that sort of seemed to just like drift from city to city.
You sound like gypsies, man.
And we kind of were. My mom's in the radio business. Yeah. So when you're in the radio business, you just take jobs in radio. True. I equate it, because a lot of people, when they hear all the different cities I've lived in, they go, oh, military. I'm like, no, it's radio. It's the same thing. I'm like, you're in a city and they change a format. Well, now your rock station's now a Latino station. So they'll turn over a whole staff or whatever. That's just sort of how it is. You just float from station to station. And you have things like, you know, your Clear Channels and your Viacoms that own a bunch of stations. So when you get promoted, it's not at that station. They promote you to another state and you move to another state. And then that opens doors into TV. And then you go to other states where there are TV position openings.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just moved everywhere. And we were like freaking Jason Patrick and Corey Haim's family. Like, we were just fucking floating around with my single mom, you know, meeting these weird fucking people everywhere we went to. So I identified with that part of it. But then I mean, the 80s were all about urban legends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me, there was always the, oh, you heard this so-and-so died under this bridge, or, you know, the hook in the hand hanging on the door, all that stuff. And to me, that played into a lot of this movie too, about all the missing kids, the missing persons showing up everywhere. And it was because these gang of kids that you thought were really cool, or there's something not right with these kids. You got to stay away from these kids. They were the bad kids in town. And then the other thing were the carnival rides too, where it just seemed like, to me, carnivals started to kind of die out. They're still around even today. But, you know, when I was a kid, it was all about the moving carnivals that would drift through town crazy carnies and shit like that.
Yeah.
So there's just so much about that very movie.
Because you did have that sense that you could die on one of these rides throw the body in a ditch and drive away.
And that was another urban legend, that people would die. Oh, I heard that the bar came up and a bunch of people died on it. You know, but there was no...
Oh, well, the Graviton was definitely the killer. People definitely died on the Graviton over and over again. Yeah.
Or the zipper.
Cut in half when the bottom fell out. Yeah.
Yeah. So there were always, oh my God, I heard that it spun too long or whatever. You know what I mean? Or it went too fast. I heard it went too fast one time or whatever. There were just so many of those themes in this movie that hit all these points of my childhood, along with just the fucking kick-ass soundtrack. Anytime a song from the soundtrack comes on the radio, the channel does not change. Whether it's Sirius or whatever I'm listening to, it freaking gets turned up because it takes me back to this movie. And like, I've never been a big vampire guy either, but to me, and we've had this discussion recently in another, to me, it's about vampires, but it's not like Dracula, dorky, old fucking...
It was cutting Boris edge, Karloff modern, or whatever. Not time, big time 80s movie. You know, it was very... In 87, it was of 87 big time. It wasn't some bullshit throwback kind of thing.
So yeah, that's just what... For me, especially, because like, again, we moved everywhere, like, they were new people to this family, or to that city, and you meet the fucking comic book kids that are all just fucking crazy and harebrained conspiracy theorists and stuff. And then there was also the, you know, oh, we gotta, you know, you always play the game as kids too, where you gotta prepare. It's like you're, oh yeah, we gotta get our shit together because we're gonna go on some journey, which may have just been walking a few blocks or a couple miles, but that was like what you did. You had to get all your shit together. Yeah. You know what I mean? Whether it was real or fake, and you were like inventing dangers that you may need to protect yourselves from. Like, I don't know, I get those, watching that movie and hearing those songs, I'm taken back to that, you know, that hunker down with your friends. We're gonna go to that abandoned gas station or that abandoned building, and we're gonna sneak through it and see what we find. And like you said, the hotel or whatever, and they're all fucking camped out in, and they're sneaking through the hotel trying to find the vampires and stuff. And you get that kind of claustrophobic, like, we shouldn't be in this abandoned.
I just thought it was very stylish. Like, up to that point, any vampire movie I saw was
dusty
Monster
old.
Squad or...
Not even Monster Squad. I think that predates Monster Squad, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. But I'm talking about, like, at the time, your vampires were either, like, very...
They're in Transylvania.
Stroker,
they're in a haunted castle.
Or they're in some kind of comedy. Or they weren't relatable, where this is like, yeah, that's like the punk kid that lives at the end of my street. Yeah. Like, kind of feel. Like, you was like, I could see a bunch of these dudes that lived at the end of my street that were metalheads that could be vampires. Like, yeah. You would have never thought about it.
Well, and they could, like, fucking fly... They were manipulating, like, his brain and things that he was seeing.
Oh,
they
yeah,
could
like,
do shit like that.
Like, why, you like eating worms, Michael?
It's maggots, Michael. Oh, my God. You're eating maggots. Yeah, stuff like that. I'm like, oh, my God. They're totally... You know, where it's just like, oh, I'm going to suck your blood, and I'm going to go in a coffin, and I'm going to get stabbed with a steak and fucking garlic and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's so lame. I love everything about that movie to this day, and it's...
Well, and Kiefer...
No, don't want to. No, yeah. No. Don't plan.
Kiefer Sutherland, too, was so menacing back then. Yeah, you know, he did menace so well. He was such an intimidating person. You always felt like he was the kid that would pull a switchblade and gut you.
Yeah, he was the ornery, angry, don't mess with that kid just because of the way he
looks. That guy's not right. That dude will fucking knife you, man. So it's scary. And just a reminder, fucking Joel Schumacher, much maligned Joel Schumacher, but that dude fucking had style to spare back then.
Yeah, and that movie has, like you said, that movie has its own style. Yeah. It is not like any other vampire movie that predated it. And
it has a very distinctive look.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it inspired a lot of stuff that came afterwards, too.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, kids, this is the best damn party album in the whole world. That record was so good, I wanted to puke. Luckily, I didn't, though. It might have ruined my chances with the sound engineer, who is so cute. Anyway, you're on Flash, and I'm Tony, and we've got the weather next. Oh, wait a minute. That's wrong. What is this? Oh, yes. This is the Tony Ultimate Party Album. Jeez, this looks so much like my normal studio that I had an out-of-body experience for a minute there. It's got a microphone and everything, except for the bed and the jungle swing.
Like a creature of the night, it's Flash FM. In California, you'll find fun, romance, and vampires.
You better get yourself a garlic t-shirt, buddy.
You been eating pizza?
No, why?
Ooh, you smell like garlic.
The Lost Boys. The New York Times calls it timely, relentlessly funny, and a hip comic twist on the classic vampire movie. Bring home The Lost Boys on video cassette from Warner Home Video.
All right, so I'm going to pick my song. I'm going to let it play first, and then I'll tell you why.
Soy MC Kid Frost, yo soy jefe, my phone is the big boss. My cuenta's loaded, it's full of balas. I put it in your face and you won't say nada. Vatos cholos, you call us what you will. You say we are assassins, you're tripping about to kill. It's in my blood to be an Aztec warrior. Go to any extreme and hold no barriers. Chicano, and I'm brown and proud. Want this chingazo, Simona said let's get down. Right now, in the dirt. What's the matter? You afraid you're gonna get hurt? I'm with my homeboys, my ties, my camaradas. Kicking back on me, ganga, y pa' mi no diga nada. You're switching gones, like Al Capone, it. Control a todo, so don't ever try to sweat me. Some of you don't know what's happening, que pasa, it's not for you anyway, cause this is for the raza.
Control Machete? Who is that?
It's Kid Frost.
Okay.
You know you're big when there's a dude in your backseat playing a saxophone.
Fuck yeah.
Vixen, did you introduce this song to me or did I hear it before you?
No, I ain't probably introduced this.
You might have, yeah, I was about to say. I know I've heard it before, but...
I think you had a copy of mine, like when you were holding...
Yeah, I think you must have introduced it to me, yeah.
This beat sounds familiar to something else.
Oh, it's a Santana song, I believe. So that was Kid Frost, La Raza.
And so... Translate, por favor?
My race. In the neighborhood I grew up in, which was extremely Latino, you had rap coming up. So you would have a lot of dudes that would try to emulate black rappers. And we had a bunch of old school, in the day we used to call them lowriders, and would piss them the fuck off. Because the lowrider's a car. The dude driving the lowrider's a cholo. And the cholos were like, motherfucker, I ain't a lowrider, I'm a cholo. You're in the neighborhood. That's just the way they dressed. That's the way they acted. And as a young kid, you start emulating that. That's what you want to look like. That's how you want to be seen. So, dude, we would go to quinceañeras, and I mean, that's how we dressed. We would dress like that and crash people's quinceañeras. And so that song came out. I think I was working at the time. My dad had us working at a tortilla factory, like us packagers. That came out, and at the time, all we had was like just rap music, which I liked a lot. But that came out, and that was just like, boom, a bomb in my neighborhood. That song played everywhere. And then all of a sudden, you had like this renaissance of Latin rappers, but he was like the first one I can remember that came out from the West Coast, because of course, Cypress Hill is from the East Coast. They're from the West Coast. I'm sorry, Cypress, California. Who came out first? I can't think who came out first. Cypress Hill was more, I guess you would say, mainstream, where Kid Frost, like I didn't see Kid Frost on any of the shows.
I don't think I've ever even heard of Kid Frost, so Cypress Hill was definitely more mainstream. Yeah.
I don't know. It was just the way it was in the neighborhood. Right, we were talking about earlier where you were talking about the models. Like, what was those were the models I was chasing, the lowrider models. Like, that's what was on my walls. The only reason I liked Cindy Crawford is because I would see her a lot. But she looked really Latina. So I was like, well, she kind of looks Latin, so she's kind of hot. Kathy Ireland and all that, I was just like, nah, yeah, you can keep that's all bone. We're good. And so the cars, I mean, I had friends that would go and they had to get the Monte Carlo and they would have rims on them just like that. But, you know, maybe the seats were missing in the back, no interior.
Them Daytons.
Yeah. They'd have, you know, the fucking equalizer in the back with the fucking the subwoofers and all that shit. So that song, just when I hear it, it reminds me of like a group of people, friends I used to hang out with that I don't hang out with anymore. Not too long ago, there was a funeral and I had a family member go, and he was just like, oh, all these old friends, all these old guys from the neighborhood were there, you know, and they hear like, oh, well, so-and-so's blind and so-and-so's this. Like, to think that from when we were kids like that to where they are now, like, they were all falling apart, they're all old, or they've been in jail for so long, and it was just weird, man. But that was just kind of a small chapter in my life, and so when I hear that song, there was good times then, but, yeah, it was good times then, but it got crazy sometimes.
Well, that bachelor party we went to where we were all on that bus, and y'all ended up going to the strip club, and I bailed on you. Were some of those guys, some of your guys from back then?
No, man, by then, I'd already moved on. That group of guys that I hung out with, well, yeah, some of them were. A couple of the guys were. They had kind of grown out of it, but some of the guys that stayed hardcore in the neighborhood, nah, they never grew out of it. I wouldn't hang out with them today.
So what year was that Kid Frost La Raza song? Man. Internet, save us.
I'm going to say 93, maybe 94.
What? That's got to be older than that.
You think so?
Really? Nah, maybe not.
I'm kind of spitballing. Let me see.
1990.
Yeah, that looked older than 94.
Wow, that was off.
Dude, that might have predated Cypress Hill.
I think so. I just remember them coming out and it was like huge in my neighborhood.
When was Cypress Hill's debut album? Look that up. Diabolus.
I was still looking at La Raza. The song reached 42 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Album was Hispanic Causing Panic. It was featured on the Grand Theft Auto San Andreas soundtrack, or at least the game itself.
I heard it way before that.
Well, yeah, no. You exposed it to me way before that, because I knew once I heard it that I heard it before.
At one time,
before,
I gave a bunch of my music by accident. I had like some really Latino-centric music on there, hip-hop. And I remember he's like, you ever taking this shit? Or am I holding on to it? What I give you, like, Molotov and all kinds of shit, dude. I gave you all kinds
this
of shit.
This isn't Sarah McLachlan.
Cypress Hill goes back to 1988.
Yeah, but I don't know when that, like, when did they blow up? You know what I'm saying?
91 was the self-titled album.
So
by a year?
But I'm not seeing any hints off of that one.
Yeah, I mean, if they didn't chart until 94 or something, 93.
I want to say Black Sunday was the one that hit hard, right?
Black Sunday was their massive, massive album.
Insane in the Brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they really blew up in 93, though.
But like I said,
way before then.
Like, so when he was wearing that poncho, that's what we used to wear to kind of stand out at school. That big Mexican poncho.
It was quite a time. Quite a time.
Yeah. You couldn't get away with that shit now, dude. There's no way they'd let you wear that to school.
Oh, no.
Well, honestly, today, I think it's kind of a caricature, right? I mean, that's so broad by today's standards, you know. That
I have one in my closet, man. They're fucking comfy as shit.
I'm talking about the whole look. That whole look with the gigantic headband and everything.
No, dude, that's going.
That's like throwback,
dude,
that's
been around since like the fucking the 30s. Like that.
Right, but do people don't still roll out like that, do they?
Fuck yeah.
Really?
No, nobody's walking around in the streets with freaking ponchos,
dude,
on full.
Dude, if you go to a lowrider show, you're gonna see that shit all over the place. They still have lowrider shows here.
And that,
you
know, like, they still have cosplay though at this point. If it's a lowrider show dressing like that,
you're not gonna dress. Dude, you dress like that? Oh, nah, dude, they'd be disrespectful. Like, I wouldn't try to dress like that anymore because I don't live like that. They take that shit real serious. You know, the tres flores in their hair,
tres leches in the belly.
Got through, you know, the white.
Well, you're reminding me. There was a
Dickies. Yeah, no.
There was a time where I was driving a compact car and I was still on the brown side of town, and I decided I was going to decorate the car a little bit, so I would go and I'd get these homies. They were popular at the time, the homie stickers, but I was really into the Jew thing then, so I would convert them into Jewies. I'd give them like locks and shit.
I don't even know who would be offended right now, but somebody's gotta be.
He's just throwing stuff.
I used to live on the brown side of town, and I bought homies and converted them to Jewies because I was really into the Jew thing.
And then the kids would be stealing my Jewies off of my car. So I don't know if they were like stripping it because I was being disrespectful to the homies, or if they just wanted my Jewies.
No, they would have just set your car on fire. You would have walked in and it would have been flaming probably. I remember a year ago, maybe, I went to my old neighborhood where my grandparents used to live, and everything seemed fine. And then I stopped and I ran into an old friend. So I'm sitting there talking to him. And sure enough, man, two cholos just walking down the street, like no big deal. Walking to the end of the street, dickied out. And I was just like, yep, neighborhood ain't changed much. And I never coming back. Nice seeing you, buddy. And just kind of drove out of the neighborhood. I mean, it's just weird because like they just kind of pass on that thing to the next generation. So I mean, nowadays, what, the kids have to wear, like, uniforms and shit to school now, so they
could wear.
But when I went to school, that's how we dressed. I didn't always dress like that, but...
Man, and I really kind of do feel like we're, like, one of the last generations to get out and, like, go through the school thing and deal with the bullshit that comes with that and get out and still feel like individuals and still, like, being able to kind of, like, have an identity that you can create and be a part, you know, to go to school. Whereas today, I feel like you have to conform so much to these, all the standards that they have in the schools now and the dress codes and everything else. Yeah. I really do feel like it subsumes your identity.
It's for the best.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
You need to go to school and go to fucking school.
Yeah, but I'm not sorry that I didn't have to deal with that, though.
No, I mean, neither, man. I mean, we wore whatever the hell we wanted to, and it was just no big deal. Now, I remember while I was in, like, junior high, that I started to see schools that had dress codes, like, where you'd have to, everybody was wearing polos and, like, the same color khaki pants and stuff, and I was like, whoa, that's weird. That's super duper weird. But that hadn't percolated up to junior highs and high schools yet, which now I think it's part.
Well, I remember, like, for us, it was, so I bounced around high school, so I remember being in a high school here on this side of town, and you had to be clean shaven, no baggy clothes, stuff like that, and then I was shipped out because of some problems I had up to the north, where it was a more, the pigments were lighter, I guess you would say, in their school district. And they had facial hair. And of course, grungers, they're all wearing flannel. So I'm like, well, I got flannel. So I fit in fine. And dudes were sagging. I'm like, wow. Like, it was just a weird to know, like, y'all can do this here. But if you do this shit at my last school, like, that shit won't play. If your pants were sagging, they would make you pick up your pants and give you a piece of rope to tie off if you didn't have a belt.
Yeah.
And I think you got caught multiple times like that, they would just ship you off to detention.
Yeah. Like, so at my junior high, that wasn't a big deal, but that was a different state. And then when I got here, there seemed to be a little more cracking down on the sagging, where it was like, all right, it's, you got to pull your pants up, dude. Pull your pants.
I remember
up.
People used to wear Timberlands, but people would go buy Caterpillar work boots because they're steel toe. And you had to be careful because those were the dudes that you knew would pick a fight because they were going to start kicking the shit out of you with that steel toe. And I remember the teachers never said anything. And then after a while, it was like, oh, yeah, now shoes have to be tennis shoes. Like, you can't wear boots to school anymore because I guess they caught on.
I can kind of remember when they didn't want people wearing steel toe boots to school. I remember something like that happening, and they were telling people to stop doing that.
I wore steel-toed boots to school for a while there.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
I had a pair of Caterpillars. I didn't beat nobody up on them, but I was just like, I was ready.
I wasn't.
Fight kicked off. Man, I didn't have any of that cool stuff. I got a pair of Doc Martens from a friend because they were too big, but they were size like 14s. And I was like, like, I got pretty big feet. I'm like, I ain't fitting these 14s, especially Doc Martens that run kind of big. I was like, this is absurd. So I tried to wear them like one time, and I'm like, no, this isn't happening. And I tossed them like a closet.
Other than that,
I had like just junk Payless cheap garbage.
Is it the funny thing was, for us, Doc Martens were associated with, like, you know, skinheads. Like, that's what the skinhead kids wore. Because we had skinheads in school.
My brother wore a lot of Doc Martens. Yeah. So I could.
It was more just like punk. If you were a metal kid, if you were sort of a not mainstream kid, Doc Martens.
We had a lot of punk and metal kids in my school because I hung out with them. And they would wear the Metallica blue jean jacket with the patches, and they were cool. But we had legit skinhead kids that would wear like white t-shirts or jeans, the red suspenders.
Yeah,
then we would wear the white laces with their Docs.
When was this? 91. There were no like skinhead Nazis where I was.
No.
It was not a thing.
Well, they called me Frankenstein when I wore my steel-toed boots, so it was not a common thing in that time period in that place. So,
So that was my
Kid Frost.
If you're still partying, it's time to turn the tape over and start it again. It's on a what? It's on a CD? With lasers? And if you're still partying, it's time to turn the CD over and start all over again. Wait a minute. What do you mean you can't flip these things? Get with it! What are you, 30 or something?
Flash FM. If it's popular, we do it. Flash FM. Totally awesome.
Still believe through pain.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Hustle. It's John Lamoureux. All right, who will ever forget that moment when they first saw that really buff, super greased up saxophone player on the boardwalk performing this song, I Still Believe, in that classic 1987 movie, The Lost Boys. If you're of a certain age like me, that is one of the most indelible, iconic images of the entire decade. That guy is named Tim Capello, and he is this week's guest. And I'm so excited for you to hear this, because if you look at him, you probably would assume that he's a certain kind of guy. He's rough and he's aggressive. He's not like that at all. He is the sweetest, gentlest, funniest sweetheart of a man you will ever know. I came into this, you know, fully prepared with this very formal list of questions that I wanted to go down, and he took me on tangents that were way more interesting and entertaining than anything I could have dreamed up. I don't know if you know this, but his primary gig for a long time was playing with Tina Turner. We talk about that. We talk about a lot of his other collaborations too, like Peter Gabriel, Carly Simon. In the early days, back in the 70s, when Billy Crystal was starting out as a struggling comedian, Tim would travel around and be his piano player, if you can believe that. So we talk about all that. We talk about why he never had a solo career, and it's really hilarious, actually. We talk about what it felt like to be parodied on Saturday Night Live by John Hamm recently, when he was Sergio the Sexy Sax Man. A lot to unpack here. He's such a funny guy.
The Hot Singles chart includes the 108 Sage, Bone Dragon Comics, Dr. Ange, Bad at Shapirak, Cash Flag, Chris and Bad Books for Beginners, Cinnabud Podcast, Gray Muir, The Hoopers, Ice in the Face, Iowa's Joe, Jared Albrecht, The Yard Sale Artist, Jeffrey Brown, Justin's First Dawn, Keith G. Baker, Ken Stark, Kevin Dodgy, Christados, Long Box of Darkness, Long Box Crusade, Michael Wagner, Odell Abner Dracula, who added Festive, Pat Sampson, Paul Quibell Smith, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Ryan Daly, Sean Michael Ortega, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Terrence Castingway, Tim Price, Trekker Talk, and Zach Sally.
One Song Each is a Rolled Spine podcast. This is a not-for-profit fan production. Any copyrighted materials used is believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended. Please leave your comments and criticisms on our website. We especially encourage participation on this show. Feel free to call in and leave a request. Maybe you'll even get featured on the show. We thank you for your rapt attention.